Didn't start. Okay, I'll say it again. We're going to be speaking in English. You can translate this if you want. That's the main atheistic language of the world today. It's also the main theistic language if you take it in terms of Srila Prabhupada's books being distributed. Oh, I'm not sure. Maybe Hindi's gone past English now. Definitely when Prabhupada was present here, then English was by far the greatest language in terms of Prabhupada's book distribution. Now it might be Hindi. Might have gone past. I don't know. Because in terms of book distribution, India is far, far ahead. I think probably as much as the rest of the world put together for the last so many years. And then many of those books will be in Hindi, obviously, also. Okay. Those of you who like to listen to Srila, recordings of Srila Prabhupada speaking, you'll note that many times, especially on morning walks, he would have sparring sessions with his disciples. You know what sparring means? You do that in martial arts. Sparring means friendly fight for practice. But as it's for practice, then that's for professional fighters, boxers, and so on. They have sparring matches. So it may be a friendly fight, but it's serious in as much as someone who takes the role of fighting with the prize fighter, they have to put up a good show, otherwise he doesn't get any proper practice. So Srila Prabhupada, he usually wouldn't take the position of an atheist. He would usually have his disciples do so. And not all kinds of positions. Srila Prabhupada would have them take up sometimes the role of a contending Christian, often an atheist, most often a scientist, and Prabhupada would reply. Or sometimes Srila Prabhupada himself would take the position of what's called the devil's advocate. He himself would take that position. And usually when he did, his disciples couldn't properly reply. And then Prabhupada would give the proper reply. Sometimes, after several attempts, then they'd get the right position. Okay, so Srila Prabhupada, in this way, he was training his disciples so that they can go in the world and meet non-devotees, atheists, demons, and give them the proper understanding, or at least defeat them. They may or may not accept that they're defeated, but Srila Prabhupada wanted to have his disciples go in the world and establish. For the scientists, he said two things, his scientist disciples. One thing is that they have not gone to the moon, you should establish. And another thing, that the chicken is a better scientist than you. Because you say that you will create life in future, but the chicken every day lays an egg, which has the potential of life if it's fertilized. So Srila Prabhupada was, of course, that's one particular area. Today, I'm just going to be sparring with Jayadeva or anyone else who wants to take it up. I'll be just now taking the position of an atheist. Actually, most atheists nowadays, including the world's most famous atheist of the present day, Richard Dawkins. He's over 70 years old. He's an Oxford professor, but he's as enthusiastic as a young boy to go all over the world and propagate what he thinks is the foolishness of believing in God. He's on a mission because he thinks that theism is misleading the world. So he's a famous, I guess he's retired as a professor now, but he was a professor of evolutionary biology something in at Oxford University. So he has good scientific credentials. Philosophically, he's maybe not as strong as he thinks he is. But even he says, he admits, well, there is a possibility that there is God because we can't prove it or disprove it. But all the evidence points to there being no God, according to him. And I believe he first came to high public prominence when in England he was behind having advertisements put on the buses. That's a very common thing in England, on the double-decker buses. They have double-decker bus. Translation in Tamil is double-decker bus. And they all know what you're talking about, for sure. Is it? How are you going to explain that? You may not even know what it means yourself. If you say in Hindi, do tala ki bus, they may can't even imagine it. Well, that's a good argument for theism, actually. You can't imagine. People previously, they couldn't imagine. Well, actually, I'm supposed to be an atheist now, so I shouldn't give you ammunition here. So he sponsored the posters being put on. Don't worry, there's probably no God, so you don't have to worry about what happens after death. Something like that, they said. Just get on with life and enjoy it like that. So he became known for that. And anyway, so he calls himself, he admits a very small level of agnosticism. Atheism means one who says he doesn't believe in God. Agnostic means he doesn't know. He says there may be, there may not be. We don't know. But mostly they tend to think that there probably isn't, the agnostics. And then there is a recently coined term, anti-theist. This was Christopher Hitchens. I don't know if he coined the term or if he popularized it, but he would always correct when he was on TV shows and this and that. If people said he's an atheist, I'm not an atheist. I'm an anti-theist. I'm against religion. Not simply not believing in God, but I'm against religion. And Dawkins' position is very much like that. Also, very much, he thinks that religion has done so much harm in the world and continues to do so. So better it's stopped. It's also irrational and anti-scientific. And we have in India the Indian Rational Association, which operates on pretty much the same premise. I'm pretty sure that almost all the members are Hindus by background. Interestingly, the initials IRA, Indian Rational Association, in myself being from England, that when I read IRA, I know better the Irish Republican Army, which is, during much of my youth growing up in England, it was well known for terrorist activities, letting off bombs and killing people like that. They were just like, that time they were prominent terrorists. So anyway, without more ado, I have to take the position of an atheist, and yourself and anyone else can bombard me. It's me against all of you. and you have God on your side. Jaya, I just put, I wrote that. Jayastu Pandu Putranam Yesham Pakshe Janadana. The sons of Pandu must be victorious because Janadana, which means the killer of people, is on their side. Anyway, Duryodhana didn't care for that. So now I'm the Duryodhana, who's taken birth as Richard Dawkins. Is it? Maybe. Okay, so I'm an atheist. Where shall I begin? I'll begin. Okay, I have to say something. Start somewhere. You believe in God. Of course, people in the past used to believe in God, and that was understandable when there was no explanation for so many phenomena that we see in the world today. Nowadays, there's so many things explained by science, which previously people used to ascribe to supernatural causes. We can understand that when man was primitive, he didn't understand how the universe is all explainable by natural laws, and there's really no need, now that we have the scientific outlook, there's no real need to believe in that. It's some hangover it's a cultural hangover from a time when people didn't have knowledge of science. Okay, that's my first shot. It's a common enough one. Okay, you're now on TV with 20 million people watching. Yeah, let it. What do you say to that? Speak a bit loudly.
Things that can be explained in science is now, not only now, it's been explained in our scriptures many millions of years ago by thousands of years ago by our Acharyas, and Vyasadeva has written the Srimad Bhagavatam first to be able to understand such supernatural causes and how material creation works.
Really? Can you give an example? You mean Vyasadeva knew about E equals MC squared? For instance? Is that in the scriptures?
There is no, for instance, how the...
Is E equals MC squared in the scriptures? You're saying that the knowledge that modern science has is in the scriptures.
Yes.
So what about E equals MC squared?
E is equal to MC squared is a way a phenomenon is being explained. The phenomenon was there before, the phenomenon is there today. Simply the fact that you have a differentiated understanding of that phenomenon makes you probably more capable of interpreting it than you.
You're not really answering the question. Is that knowledge there? Because if it's not there, this understanding is the basis of so much scientific discovery, of so many facts, activities of the universe from the microcosmic to the macrocosmic level. It explains so many things. And if you don't have that, you can't really say you have much understanding of the universe. Okay.
As far as we know, I think scientists haven't even been to the moon yet, so how would they be able to understand?
Well, wait a minute. You're changing the subject here. You say scientists haven't been to the moon. I mean, that's just ridiculous anyway. But what about this E equals MC squared? And so many other things. Quantum theory. Now, admittedly, quantum theory is... There's a lot more to be understood about it, but what has been understood has given rise to to so many things, just like the cell phones and our equipment for sending rockets into space and all this. So many things have been possible because of these discoveries. They weren't there before. They're here now because we have got more knowledge, and you're saying the knowledge is in the scriptures, and I don't see that.
Coming to the point of E is equal to MC squared, that is under debate. There are scientists who now feel that E is equal to MC squared is wrong.
Some scientists say E equals MC squared is wrong, but obviously, in human nature being what it is, there'll be mavericks in any field. But as far as all orthodox scientists are concerned, E does equal MC squared, and that understanding is the basis of so much discovery that's been going on, as I say, from the microcosmic to the macrocosmic level. And to say that it's not true, there may be, like I say, there may be some scientists who dispute that, and that's human nature. But
there are scientists as well. So if they are opposed to this, but they have the same scientific credentials as the people who say E is equal to MC squared is true. So this is not a criteria with which we judge.
Who says E is not equals to MC squared?
Well, we're not here to refute the point that some, you yourself have said there are some mavericks who don't accept it in the first place. So I don't want to go about naming who does not accept E is equal to MC squared. But the point I'm trying to make is, you just mentioned earlier, there's a body of scientists, or mostly, there's an entire body of scientists, which is more, sounds like what is Sadhu Sammatam in the Vedic scriptures. There is a whole body of scientists who accepts E is equal to MC squared, and there is a...
Oh, okay, all right. I was just giving that as an example. Probably anything in science is up to challenge, and that's the way science progresses.
Well, then...
Because whatever theories are there, they become useful for further understanding, and... But there's always room to further investigate. So I was using that as an example. But the point is that your claim is that the knowledge of science is in the ancient scriptures. But I'm saying, well, E equals MC squared is one thing, and quantum theory is another thing. And there are so many things. There are so many... Previously, people used to pray to different gods and goddesses and for relieving diseases. But now we know that diseases are caused by germs. Nowadays, when people get smallpox, they don't pray to Shitala Devi. They don't get smallpox because we have vaccines. Huh?
Now, if we come back...
So, wait a minute. This claim that scientific knowledge is in the scriptures, well, there's an example of something very practical.
And there is also the proof of how a baby grows in a fetus grows in a womb. That's been explained in the Charaka Samhita. And so you can't...
Okay, we're not saying there's no scientific knowledge in the ancient world, but your claim that you had all Vyasadeva has given scientific knowledge, and therefore we should accept there is God. How is that? Why, even if there is knowledge, scientific knowledge in Shastra, that doesn't mean that we should accept God on the basis of it, because we have a whole worldview. Your worldview is that, well, God creates and maintains everything, and we show that we're showing by science that there's no need to bring God, any idea of God, into the picture at all. It's extraneous. You don't need to posit that. It's some idea, some suggestion to explain things which you can't explain. But nowadays we can explain by science.
Today, somebody is able to say if something is coming in the womb, how it's growing. they are able to see through microscope or whatever instruments they have been identified.
Now, yeah, that's a good example. You're saying that now we can see in the womb through as the child is there through X-rays and sonography. You can. Did they have that in your?
Vyasadeva wrote this. Vyasadeva didn't have anything. How did he come to know about this?
How did he come to know about that? I guess they could have. They could have done autopsies of women who died in various stages of pregnancy. It could be known by this scientific method. But I doubt if your Vyasadeva, he could do a sonography on a 3-month pregnant woman and tell the sex of the child.
He was able to say by the movement of the child that what kind of fetus is going to come, male or female. How he was able to say, he cannot cut and see.
Vyasadeva could tell,
yes.
You're saying. I don't know, I'll take your word for it. But what's that got to do with God? How does that establish God?
He had some supernatural powers, he was able to see.
But you're saying supernatural, but we're finding out all these things by science. So in the ancient world, no doubt there was good science, because there so many buildings were built, ancient buildings, like the pyramids.
Yes.
Well, what are you talking about India all the time? What about the pyramids? No doubt they had some, to build the pyramids, there must have been good knowledge of engineering, which means geometry and so many factors of physics. But the whole worldview that science gives us, that the explanation of everything doesn't require... You see, you're getting mixed up here. What I'm saying is that science gives us a whole worldview by which actually you don't even need science. It's not necessary to invoke a supernatural cause. And the supernatural cause really doesn't explain anything. It's just an imagination. But what I'm saying is that science has discovered, because you started with this premise that in the ancient Shastras there is description of God, and there's also a description of science, so therefore we should accept both sides. So even if there is some understanding of science, that it's not logical to say that because there was knowledge of science and because they also say there's God, that therefore there must be God. If someone says something which is true, okay, we can accept it's true. But if he says something which is untrue, just because he says one thing which is true doesn't mean that because he says something else is not true, that it is true. So we are saying that science gives a comprehensive worldview in which there's no need for God. Everything can be explained by natural causes.
But it's not a fact. Science is not...
Now you're saying it's not a fact. I can also say God is not a fact. You're not proving anything by just assertion.
But science is neither able to prove that.
Hmm?
Science is neither able to prove whatever it's telling is correct or not. For example, there's a
term... We're not able to prove... Well, the scientists are able to prove so many things.
For example, speed of light.
Wait a minute. Scientists are able to prove so many things, and the fact that they are developing in knowledge is proved by the progress of modern technology. And simply you're not able to prove anything. It's just some assertion about God. That's all.
For example, the kind of things which the scientists are able to do is called technological improvement. Say, for example...
Exactly.
1 minute.
So exactly.
What happens is...
This gets recorded up to there. Ask God.
It's called technological improvement. Now, for example, if you're going to build a building,
mm-hmm.
and the building is able to improve, say, for example, I'm building a building, and somebody else comes and build a nice building, then what happens is it's all technological improvement. I'm able to improve upon something.
Yeah, that's due to scientific advancement.
Yes. So, for example, science has always been wrong, proved wrong. That's an example to it. Now, there is something called...
No.
For example, I'll tell you...
These are fantastic claims that science has always been proved wrong.
The example is...
No, wait a minute. This is a fantastic... Science has always been proved wrong. This is a wild claim.
I will tell you an example.
No, you can give it. No doubt there are scientists have said things which are later proved wrong, but to say that everything has been proved wrong is a wild assertion.
It's like a laughing stock. I'll tell you an example. There's something called speed of light. Now, speed of light is a constant. What does constant mean? Constant means it's always going to be constant. Now, speed of light, there's a number to it. What is speed of light? Now, after 30 years, the speed of light has changed. Why a constant is changing?
Wait a minute. This is not relevant because...
It is relevant.
No, you made a wild assertion.
The assertion is that because...
If you show that something which scientists previously believed, which is later modified... Well, here we have to use definition of terms. Belief, yes, and knowledge.
Belief.
Practically speaking, whatever we call knowledge, if we want to talk about it psychologically, it's a belief. Practically speaking, believe. Everything. Now, your assertion is that whatever scientists say is disproved. I mean, that's just too fantastic.
You can give two examples, but
scientists are bringing out so many things. Plus, the basic worldview that they give is practically demonstrated to be useful. For instance, the very fact that we're using this microphone. Is you can't just say it's all imagination what the scientists come up with, but your God, this is something practical. You're talking so many things that the scientists are incapable, but practically the scientists are doing things which we can practically see, which are improving the human race, and it's improving. This is something
like
practical, but
you claim
there is God, which it's just some. There's absolutely no evidence whatsoever of it being true. Whereas you are criticizing the scientists, but practically, due to scientific knowledge, the scientists are able to make things like this microphone, and they're also able to make things like guns, which if you don't shut up. I might pull one out and shoot you in the head.
But like you made an assertion, said that science explains everything.
No, I didn't exactly say
that.
I didn't say. I said science offers a worldview by which everything can be understood. There is a difference.
You said science can explain everything. If you say science can explain everything, can you please explain how the world was created?
No, because it wasn't created.
How did the world come into existence?
Well, that's come. This is well known. You just go and Google it. Any kid at school knows
that there was. Proof. You don't have proof for this. It's a theory.
It's not proof in there can't be proof in as much as you can't just make a new world. But all the observations suggest strongly. That the Big Bang theory is how everything has come into existence.
How is that possible? Can you? Now your science is supposed to be based on empirical proof.
No, not necessarily. No.
Quantifiable stuff.
That's an old idea. Empirical proof. That idea went out over 100 years ago. That everything should be empirically provable.
If it is theorization, then you say that
it's theorization based on observation.
But
exactly, that's what our science is also based on. Our religion is based on the same thing.
So where's the observation that there's
our
God?
Observation is that
where's God?
You didn't see the Big Bang.
Okay, where is the?
You
where
didn't
is
see
the
wait
Big
a minute. Wait a minute. You're skipping the question there.
No, we're saying science
is based on observation, hypothesis, and there's a scientific method. It's not just someone sees something and they hypothesize, but then they subject it to scientific experimentation, which. But with God, it's just all belief, that's all.
It's not all
belief. Can you explain that in relevance to the theory of creation? You're talking about Big Bang.
No, it's not creation, again. This is some leftover ideas that you have in your head.
So can you please explain what experimentation supports your theory of
how not exactly of experimentation, but observation. It's observed that the universe is expanding. Very briefly, it's observed that the universe is expanding. It's seen that various heavenly bodies, they're gradually from our perspective, but actually fast, moving away from each other, which suggests that at some point they were all together, and so it has been hypothesized that originally there was very dense mass. I mean, this is so stupid, it's difficult. It's difficult to say it without laughing.
That's an example they give in a balloon. They show it in a balloon, actually. And they put some dots and tell you when you fill air, the balloon expands. And because the balloon is expanding, similarly, all the entire universe is expanding, and the distance between each dot is increasing.
Yeah. So there was mass, dense mass, which which exploded. Oh dear, the doctor won't like this.
We also feel in the Big Bang, except we think God lightened the dynamite.
Then, of course, Fred Hoyle doesn't believe in this. He doesn't believe in God either.
Point of again.
No.
The mic example.
But even if you say even if you don't accept Big Bang Theory, which actually any person who's studied science should accept. But still, you don't need God in the picture.
Well, the
there's no need to invoke.
Where did the bang?
There's no need to invoke God. Well, let Jayadev, you say something. You're supposed to be.
I'm assuming in this Big Bang theory, this small mass was rotating at a very fast speed, and because of that rotation, it eventually expanded.
Well, there are different theories. It's very difficult to say exactly what was there in the beginning, but it's clear that there was. Just like black holes, it's a similar thing. That black holes means there's so much mass is compressed into a tiny area, and then by the pressure it all explodes. So this way, universes expand, and then when they're expanded so much, then they again compress, and then they come to a black hole, and then again it explodes, and this way it's going on. But anyway, even if we don't accept Big Bang Theory, we could also. The main opposition to this in the scientific community is Fred Hoyle's solid state theory, that the universe is just as it is. But he also doesn't believe in God, that it's just there.
So, what is the explanation science is able to give?
But, well. Fred Hoyle's idea is that you don't need an explanation. This is actually classic ancient Sankhya theory. The universe is just there, and what do you need to explain it for? Why? It's just there.
Well, then what's the whole purpose of science to try to explain phenomena? Why do you want to explain anything? We just live like animals.
Why not? You're trying to explain things by saying God. We're explaining by science.
You just said that science can explain perceivable phenomenon and explain.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, why explain?
Definitely, if it wasn't for science, you wouldn't be having this now.
So no, the problem here.
There was no stainless steel in. There was no stainless steel until recently.
Science is always able to tap the resource, but science is not able to say where this resource came from.
Yeah, well, they may not. Why do you presume that because you have to say where it came from?
Same, the examples that you gave earlier, like this mic. Now the mic is able to tap an energy which is already lying in the universe.
Yeah.
Where did the energy came from?
Well, that we could, that we, that's the
what
business.
Science is able to do.
That's
is,
the business of science to explain all these things.
But how they are not able to do it now?
Hmm?
How they are not able to do it now?
What? Not able to do what?
How this energy came about? How this energy is already there?
Well, there are various theories about that.
Theory. It's a theory. Where yeah. is the fact?
Where, the same thing with you. You don't know, and you're just
if
you just
have,
you just postulate some God.
You
postulate God, but we are doing serious research
when
to explain these things, and we have explained many things which you haven't explained at all.
But that doesn't make you better because you haven't proved anything.
Have
well, we've proved
theory,
so we've proved so many things. We've proved so many things. Just like this, you can talk about God, but we're doing things which actually
we have proved. Also, we also have proof.
What,
like
what is the proof required
the
for it?
Hmm?
What is the proof required for it? It's just a tapping of a resource. A metal was taken. It was formed into a shape, and it has been given.
No, but
what
that's because that's because of scientific knowledge,
no,
my dear sir.
What knowledge is required for this? Even it was used previously before science came.
Definitely, there's a scientific knowledge, just like the. You don't find in your science stainless steel. That's an improvement because of scientific research.
Even previously, they had better instruments for drinking the water. They had the metallurgical knowledge. They had this scientific.
You may knowledge. Have, but
so,
that,
so
what is that? What has that got to do with God?
No,
even if people in the ancient world,
so,
just like for instance in Egypt, they built the pyramids.
So
no doubt, they. Wait a minute. Wait a minute, sir. You're 5-1. You have to give me time to speak here. No doubt they, had good knowledge of geometry, trigonometry, engineering, and all these things. But they didn't believe in your God, those Egyptian people.
No, see the thing is.
So how does it? Even if you say you had good scientific knowledge in the ancient world, but how does that prove your God? Because the people who had completely different religious systems.
This whole premise. It started with our talking about E is equal to MC squared.
No, it didn't. It began with the idea that because we have scientific knowledge in scriptures, therefore
no,
we
I
should accept that
I
there's God.
I have scientific proof for what I'm telling you now because I can rewind this and play that to you, and that's where we started first. We started
talking
about the fact that E is equal to MC squared is not available in the Vedic scriptures. My premise here is...
No, but that's because the... proposition was put that scientific knowledge is in the scriptures, and although it wasn't clearly enunciated, but the idea is that because we have knowledge of science in the scriptures and also knowledge of God, therefore we should accept that there is God according to scriptures. That was the beginning. Anyway, you can go on.
The point I'm making here is, if you compare where we are with regard to scientific knowledge and achievements today, and where we could be 50 years down, or where we had been 50 years behind. We might, looking at where we are, this is just, what has changed today is there's this basic knowledge that has been picked up and applied, and the application of this knowledge has changed. But there are so many other, there could be so many other planets where there is life, and they could be much more advanced than us.
Scientists don't deny that.
Scientists will not.
Scientists don't deny that at all. What's that got to do with your theory?
So my premise here is there will be people who are much more advanced than where we stand today or where we stand.
Quite likely, and many atheistic scientists accept that also. So what's that got to do with what you're saying?
Just as you are quoting an E is equal to MC squared as the basis of the measure of the knowledge of Vedic scriptures, I'm telling you that scientists today, if we measure them up against a much more advanced civilization or a much more advanced planet, they would consider this whole scientific mush we are talking about as a ridiculous thing.
Yeah, just like scientists
just like scientists
consider your belief in God to be some primitive mush.
You could say that.
But another thing science is not able to say is
about the... No, scientists admit that there are many things that we don't know. But you just fill it all in with God. God of the gaps, Dawkins
origin
calls
of
it.
Life.
That you, whatever you can't explain, you say God.
No,
and then or you bring a supernatural cause, but then as science explains it, just like for instance, I'll give that example. That example I already gave, that you used to think that for various diseases you had to pray to different gods. But now we know that so many diseases are caused by germs, so we just...
Just like you have many...
Wait a minute, you're not answering the point.
I'm going to answer. The thing is, but every day, even with the advancement of science, there are various diseases for which the science is not able to find a solution.
But they will.
See, this is like this. I'll give an example.
The disease comes, and then they research, and then they find a solution. It's going on time after time.
See, you are never going to give an answer. Post-dated check.
No, it's not a post-dated check. There are so many diseases which scientists have investigated and they found cures for. So it's quite... feasible that whatever diseases come up, they'll find more solutions.
The same thing has been done in the traditional system.
Yes.
But what?
You compare 10,000 years ago, 5,000 years ago, and 1,000 years ago. Where's the
logical connection? If you say that because there was some knowledge in your ancient scriptures, and they also speak of God, that therefore we should accept God. Where's the logical connection?
You're posing the same thing. You're saying that we created this.
No,
planet.
We're saying that we have a worldview which doesn't require the mental postulation of there being a God. It's not required. You bring in science or you don't bring in science. And the science is just an example of one worldview by which you don't need God to explain everything. You don't need to explain anything.
You just want to ignore the question. You want to ignore the...
Yeah, that's a good idea. Why bring in God at all? What do you need God for? You live...
Why do you ask what gives you the... position to say that this question is not required in life?
Because you live, you die, and then you're wasting your time fighting with each other.
But where did life come from?
Wait a minute, let's go for one question at a point. Life, everyone sees. Someone's born and they live. So, as an anti-theist, we want to see there's so much ignorance in the world due to this belief in God, just like, for instance, people, they won't take vaccines because they believe it's against their religion and therefore their children die. It's causing so much harm in the world.
Look, you're putting all of theism into one box. It's not like that. Just like you have scientists who believe in the Big Bang, who don't believe in the Big Bang. There are theists who don't fight, who don't do all this kind of things. So just, theism is
the unnecessary belief in God, which is not required to live a human life.
It's
not required to live a human life to believe in God. It's just causing so much damage in the world. No doubt there may be some good religionists, but it's a misleading theory.
But science is an unnatural theoretician. They are just theoretizing something.
You can say that, but we have practical proof of how human society is being improved by scientific improvements. Oh, and you're just saying in the past you had people who could tell that there were babies in the womb and all this kind of thing. It's just some theoretical.
Science has improved people's lives.
Yes.
Oh, yeah?
No.
Then why are you using?
Worse in many ways. You've got more.
Why are you using this? Why are you using this microphone then? Why are you using this microphone?
Origin of life. Okay. The important question which science is not able.
You're going all over the place.
No. The point is where is origin of life?
There's no need to believe in God. No.
Then how do you explain origin of life?
If we look at history, historically speaking, science originated from theism. In actuality, if you look at today's, it's the scientific...
As a social phenomena, because people all over the world believed in God, the first scientists, they also believed in God. But as the scientific research went on more and more, they realized that they didn't have to believe in God. Many of them.
So in the progression of scientific thinking, we have had a state where we have theism and we have had scientific temper that go well hand in hand at some point in time.
Yeah, in the past, Newton believed in God.
And then there is some point.
But then, as science progressed more and more, people realized that you don't really need to believe in God at all.
The point is, it is not necessary that science and theism have to be divergent or completely segregated from each other.
Yeah, but it's unnecessary. Also, science can get on very well without any theism. Scientists don't need God. God needs scientists because they can't explain things. That's why the Catholic Church, for instance, has accepted evolutionary theory. It's the biggest theistic body in the world, and they've also accepted, going against their own scriptures, they've adjusted their understanding of the scriptures due to discoveries of scientists. Religion needs God and religion needs science, but science doesn't need religion. So it's unnecessary.
The fact is that there is theism and there is science. And today's science has cut the theism out, but has kept the faith and has kept what scientists today call blind faith. Is what is being applied?
No. Then you don't know what science is.
There's so much of science today which is theorization. Which cannot be proved.
If you say science is blind faith, then you don't know what is science at all.
It's not all of science can be proved or is acceptable.
Wait a minute. Then you don't know what science is at all. It's not that scientists just sit down and something comes out of their mouth and they blindly believe it.
Why do you have refutations?
Refutations are also part of the scientific process.
Wait a minute.
The scientific process is that there is an accepted body of knowledge. Which has been studied, empirically and hypothetically ascertained by many people who apply their intelligence in the scientific method. That means in neutrally studying various phenomena and trying to explain them by rational means. So now various factors of what we study are highly abstruse. So therefore there may be various hypotheses suggested. But then if someone suggests a hypothesis, he has to give an explanation of it. For instance, in cosmology, a lot of the explanations, they rely on mathematical reasoning. Even E equals MC squared is a simple formula, but it requires very complex mathematics to back it up. It's not just something which popped out of the mouth of Herr Einstein. So that mathematical reasoning has been checked by various scientists to see there's no fault in that. Then there's also observation.
This is not acceptable because...
Wait a minute, excuse me. Let me just explain to you what the scientific process is.
I really don't get my head around your explanation of this.
Well, you have to listen. You have to listen and try to understand. Tadvidi pranipatena shravanam, you know all these things.
The earlier example which was quoted.
I mean, you're just for religious fanatics. You should try to understand there is this. No, actually, if you are going to discuss with scientists and people who propound science, you're going to have to listen to this and refute it. It's not just a shouting match. Then they'll just call you fanatics. So. Yeah, there is a scientific method. Now, we admit that we can't know everything about everything, and maybe that's our humility in relation to theists who think that they can explain everything by hypothesizing some god. But we are more humble and we recognize our limitations, but at the same time, we do have a scientific method by which there is observation, hypothesis. The hypothesis has to be on a scientific basis. That means it just like the example in cosmology, it has to, and physics, it has to be backed up by mathematics, and then observation. Einstein again came up with all kinds of theories which at the time seemed to be very strange, such as that light doesn't travel in light is not light waves, light can bend, that space and time they are mathematically they can be considered to be one entity, and all kinds of strange things which people at the time thought was very strange. But because of the why that came to be accepted, and there's so many other theories, it's not that Einstein's the only scientist in the world, but why his theories came to be largely accepted, because the observation and the mathematical theorems behind that, it all fitted together. So there is a scientific method. And although I admit to being a layman, and there are very few people in the world today who could explain E equals MC squared in mathematical terms, and then even if you tried to explain, it would be very difficult for most people to follow. But there is a method which is followed, and as a result of this, even not everyone who understands it, but they can take that and go on and make and apply it in the real world. And this is different, of course, quantum theory. And again, it's called quantum theory because it's very abstruse and there are various interpretations of it. But factually, what's come out of it is all kinds of things like your cell phones. You wouldn't be there if it wasn't for quantum theory. So it is knowledge. You can't say it's not knowledge. Even if we may say it's a theory, but the demonstrable uses of it, the fact that we can't prove it, the fact that it is usable in the world, shows that it can be called knowledge as much as anything can be called knowledge. Anything you say can be, philosophically, anything can be challenged.
Theoretical things cannot be called knowledge. Point one.
Well, then your God is can't be called knowledge. It's all... It can be called, according to the generally accepted use of the word knowledge, much of what goes on in science today should be called knowledge.
Now, for example, the same example which I quoted earlier is that the scientific process where observation, a group of scientists agree to a process and something is acceptable. That's what you said.
Yeah.
Now, the same set of people in 1951, when they set a constant for the speed of light and they told it's a constant, why in 2011...
It's slightly changed.
It's not a constant then. Why do you
constant? No, it's a constant, but what the constant is may be understood to be slightly different. That's not a very good example. I don't think that's a very good example, even if I was on your side. It's not a good argument. I don't think so. Rather, that shows that it shows the point that science is always advancing.
No, then you cannot call it a constant.
Yeah, of course you can call it a constant. If you don't exactly know what it is, that still doesn't mean it's a constant.
Because they don't know what is it. That's it.
No, the fact that it's a constant and what it actually is are two different phenomena. You're a bit muddled there in your logic.
Now, you say...
No, actually, I'm speaking from a neutral point of view here, saying you're muddled. Anyway, I think we don't need to... It would be interesting to go on. But anyway, it gives us a little idea of what we're up against. There's actually no end to this discussion. Ultimately, it all comes down to faith. And there are so many things, philosophy, philosophy of language, What is the meaning of the word knowledge, for instance? What is the meaning of the word faith? Psychology? Why we... But that's another thing that atheists invoke, psychology. That it's... Dawkins made the... And this is one of his more absurd claims. The belief in God is due to some genetic disorder. That's a pretty tough one. But that's psychology. And then theists may also invoke psychology to say that the very fact that so many people believe in God suggests that there is God. There's a psychological counterpart or phenomenon. There is a solid phenomenon. And Dawkins' answer to that is the God gene. Something got left over. Sigmund Freud had the idea that, well, people used to believe in God when men were hunter-gatherers and the biggest man in the tribe would dominate everyone else. The father would be stronger than all the sons and he'd control all the women, and then the boy... It came down in evolution that humans used to look up to some big father figure who they were afraid of, and that became God. It's risible, to use the word, laughable, but it's so. It can go on ad infinitum, and in fact, for a few years, there were all kinds of debates going on, and you can see them on YouTube between Dawkins and Hitchens and Sam Harris and Daniel Dennett and others. These are the four most famous ones. Between them and various theists, and there was never any conclusion.
They're
not so popular now, because it's just that I watched a few of them, then I stopped watching them, because it's just the same thing over and over again. Mostly they argue, the atheists and the theists, not from a philosophical standpoint, but from, they mostly argue the harm that religion has done in the world, and then the religionists say, oh, no, the good it's done for the world, which means they're both on the mundane platform of thinking that this world is for us to enjoy, and some people say that God is there to help us enjoy it, and others say, no, if there's a God, he wouldn't allow so much suffering, and it goes on like that. Apparently, as I heard, Sri Ramanujacharya said that the only proof is the Vedic proof, if to accept Shastra. So one of my philosophical interests, I have many philosophical interests, but I can't get into them all because I'm writing books, and the book is already there in the mind, but to manifest it is so much work. Otherwise, there are so many things to take up, so many philosophical fields to take up. But one I'm very interested in, and I'm surprised that no one else seems to have taken it up or taken interest in, is the root of everything that we say in Krishna consciousness is Veda Purushayatva. Everything rests on the Vedas, on Shruti. The fact that it is eternal, eternally existing. We should get into that. That ultimately will be challenged. Buddhists and Jains must have challenged it, but I haven't come across anyone, not that I've investigated it much, anyone who's conversant, and at least among our own devotional community. I don't know anyone who's conversant with the various arguments that the Buddhists and Jains have put up, and the counter-arguments. But our everything begins from we accept the Vedas, that's all, as being axiomatically correct. As far as philosophy is concerned, Tarka Pratishta, by discussion, you'll never come to any conclusion. And philosophers in the modern world, they also accept it's the one subject, philosophy, that the more you study it, the more you become confused, and the more you understand that we don't really know anything. There's no end. Philosophy, it's like a dog chasing his tail. You can never find it. But the basis of everything is faith, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Can anyone say what that is? Yeah, shloka. The word Shraddha comes up many times in Bhagavad Gita. But that's the use of the word Shraddha. There's one chapter which discusses particularly faith. Now I'm giving you a clue. Trividha bhavati shraddha dehinang sasvabhavacha satvaki rajasi chaiva. What's the last line? Anyway, then the next verse is shraddha maya yang purusho yo yaj chacha sevasa. That everyone is... what makes a person is their faith. And according to one's faith, a person is what they are according to their faith. Sattviki rajasi chaiva tamasi cheti mang shrinu. Then the next verse, jivita bhavati shraddha. That's the second verse. First verse is Arjuna asks, because at the end of the 16th chapter, Krishna says that one should accept Shastra. And then Arjuna asks, well, what if someone is good and religious, but they don't, not according to Shastra, a Shastra Vihitam Gaura? Then Krishna says, then there are three kinds of faith. Tamasi Cheti Masha. Then what's the second verse? What's the first line? 17.3, the second verse of Krishna in that chapter. Sadvana Rupa Sarvasya Shraddha Bhavati Bharatas Shraddha Mayo Yang Purusha Yo Yaj Shraddha Sa Eva Saha. Faith is the basis of everything. In my ongoing commentary on Bhagavad Gita, I propose that the word Shraddha here could be translated into modern English as worldview, outlook. People have different kinds of outlook. But there's no end. Ultimately, it's experiential. Knowledge of God, or its experience. Bhakti pareshanu bhava. Pratyakshavagamam dharmyam. Susukam kartamavya. Srila Prabhupada would say, well, this is the proof. If you take to Krishna, this is observable. If you take to Krishna consciousness, you become free of misgivings. Maya saktamanaf pata. Yogam yunjan marasha asangshayam samagramang yata gyasasi chachrino. This Srila Prabhupada often translated doubt as misgiving. So he will be free from all doubts. So it's experiential also. But that is, that can be dangerous also, because people may experience so many things. They may experience that God is in my heart telling me to kill so many people. There are people who say that. So it's a combination. Bhakti as presented in Srimad Bhagavatam is based on Vedanta Shruti. That's the term Srila Prabhupada uses in the translation of that verse, that What is that verse that comes after? Vedanti tat tat vivdas? Yad shradadhana muniyo. See the word shraddha comes there? Jnana vairagya yuktaya. Ah, then what's next? Jnana vairagya. Pashyanti atmani chatmanam bhaktiya shruti grihitaya. Very important verse. Yad shradadhana muniyo. Thoughtful person. He also has some basic faith. Yad shradadhana muniyo. Jnana vairagya yuktaya. He has knowledge and detachment. Detachment is also a symptom of knowledge. If one is knowledgeable about the situation of this world, yehi sangsparshaja bhoga dukha yonya evate adyanta vanta kaunteyana teshu ramate buddha. If one has knowledge of this world that trying to enjoy it simply leads to suffering, then he'll become detached from it. And if one understands, just like in the first lesson in Bhagavad Gita, as is well known, is that Krishna differentiates between the body and the soul. Soul is eternal, the body is temporary. Then the next thing that Krishna gets into is that, therefore, having understood this, don't try to enjoy the body. Bhogaishwarya prasaktan. This is the next lesson. Veda vada ratav parta nanyada stiti vardana. It's the next thing Krishna says. So, vairagya, yuktaya, pashyantyatmani chatmanam. They see the self within the self. They have factual experience of God through bhakti, which is shruta grihitaya, which is imbibed by the hearing process, which specifically indicates the hearing of the shastra. So, if we have to start somewhere. We have to start with some axioms. We can't begin to even think about anything or say anything. We have to accept something. Even our thought process is influenced by language. That's why Sanskrit and Sanskrit-based languages are much better for understanding these things than English. A very primitive language might not have the philosophical tools, the abstract understanding to even enter into these topics. So, we have to accept some axioms. Then we can begin philosophy. But actually, the beginning of philosophy, if we take it from a bottom-down stance, that means arohana panta, means we're here and we're trying to climb up. We're trying to get up to understand what's the big picture up there. It's very difficult to. That is, the beginning is epistemology, pramana tattva in Sanskrit. And we can't go anywhere. We'll go round and round in circles. Unless we accept that we're seeking for knowledge, and there is knowledge. The very fact that we're seeking for knowledge means that there is knowledge. And someone knows. And we can also know, but by our own endeavor we can't know. Therefore we have to accept knowledge from outside sources. That means avarohana panta. We accept knowledge coming down. So epistemologically we have to accept our humble position. We have to humbly accept our ignorance and agree to hear that there is actual knowledge of reality, and we can also get it, but not by trying to research it by ourselves due to our defects, brahm pramad vipralipsa karana patav, the tendency to make mistakes, to be an illusion, to cheat ourselves and others, and to have imperfect senses. So in this way we can accept. And the evidence is there, but we're never going to get evidence down to, let's put it around the other way. The tendency to doubt is always there. there's always another way to look at it. But certain things we can accept as facts. This mature world is full of suffering. We are eternal. That's very, very... You see, Srila Prabhupada, he, this point, more than any other, he repeated again and again in his preaching. The body is temporary, the soul is eternal. Which, if that is accepted, then it upends all of your modern science. A lot of it. It also gives a lot of credence to the Vedic knowledge. It doesn't defeat Buddhists or Jains or Mimamsakas. But if that is established, it's a great step toward establishing Vedic knowledge. And for me, that was a major reason why I was ready to accept Krishna consciousness in my youth of this lifetime. Because I'd accept it, it's just obvious that there's life after life after life. And therefore the whole modern society in ignorance of that can't help me. To me it seems obvious. To others, to many people in the Western world, even today, even though the concept is out there, but it just seems bizarre. So that's a good one. Actually, to tell you the truth, if I was to discuss with all these atheists and rationalists, I wouldn't even get into the question of is there God or not. I'd just start off with we're not the body, that's all. Reincarnation is a fact. And what's the proof? Ian Stevenson. If they won't accept Krishna. When in Stockholm, when Srila Prabhupada met the Indian ambassador there, the Indian ambassador said, well, what's the proof of the Atma, of rebirth? And Prabhupada said, because Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. And the Indian ambassador was very sarcastic. See, for Hindus or people raised in the Vedic culture, that should be good enough. But for others, Ian Stevenson's pretty good. Dr. Ian Stevenson, who's now in another body somewhere. The fact that Hindus are more willing to accept this can be, in terms of discussing with atheists, a weakness also. I'll give an example of this. Is that our devotees, often in India, our devotees, they go into schools and colleges and they present, here's the defects of modern science, here's the defects of modern society. It's all discussed in Bhagavad Gita, which shows that the defects of modern science and modern civilization, therefore we should accept Bhagavad Gita. And students think, oh, they never heard anything like that. Seems to make sense. But then the same devotees who had a lot of success doing that in India, then they got invited to do it in Russia. So they went to Russia and they showed, you see, all the defects of modern science. And people said, oh, that's true, I didn't see that. Didn't know about that. That's true. Okay, that's very interesting. Therefore, Bhagavad Gita. And they said, why? What's the connection? Okay, all right, you've shown that there's problems with modern science, but it doesn't follow that we have to follow Bhagavad Gita. So philosophically, you could, in terms of hard philosophy, you could say that that's the faith of the Hindus is or the willingness to accept the Bhagavad Gita is a solution. In the major sense, it's very good. But in terms of philosophical discussion with hard-headed atheists, many of whom exist in India also, still, then it's not such a good, it's not at all a position to argue from. And these are the people. If we can convince such people, then we'll know we're doing well. It's very good what's going on in that all of you from Hindu background. I think you're all from Hindu backgrounds, yeah. You're all taking to Krishna consciousness, so that's very good. But that's not going to be the greatest glory of our movement. The greatest glory is when the atheists and people who are not exposed to this or who have a completely different worldview, when they accept this, that will be more glorious. So Jaydev, if you're going to get trained up, get on your philosophical boxing gloves, or kung fu, whatever. Kung fu, you don't use gloves at all, no? That's Thai boxing. Thai boxing, they do? Don't know. Yeah, they use their hands also. Thai boxing means you can do almost anything. Freestyle.
Just like a mild padding that they use.
Mm. But they're not allowed to use knuckle dunners. You put these spikes on, they're not allowed to use that. That's for street fighting in the West. Pretty serious. You have spikes, punch people. That's something. Something on the edges of my childhood. Different from your pious upbringing. Okay. Knuckle dusters, or knuckle dunners, we used to call them. Yeah, why bother with all these stupid computer games? Get into a real fight. It's something that can actually benefit human society. The tendency to fight is there. Prabhupada loved it. He was a real fighter. Philosophical fighter for Krishna. Okay, let's finish now. That was probably... Anyway, stop now.